Joe, what are you doing? You're texting. We're supposed to be.
Sending an email. I'm worried about you because this is the second week in a row that we've gotten on, and I know you're in a shitty
mood. Who are you sending an email to, first of all?
My wife.
Is she not in your house?
No, she actually went to the store. She has risked everything to go to the store to get more things for our two-year-old twins. They are now officially 2 years old. Their birthday was...
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, that was Sunday, and the day before was my 51st birthday on Saturday.
Wow. Did you get any presents, by the way?
I did. I got a couple of golf items from my wife.
What did you get?
She got me a putter fitting next time I'm in Los Angeles, which at this rate will be in 2028.
2022. Yeah. I was just trying to match you.
Oh.
Well, that's nice.
But I got letters from my daughters, 23 and 20, that literally melted me. I read, and they have to do with me as much as they have to do with their new little brothers that are just... we're about to turn two, and they're really letters to them. And I read them out loud to my two-year-old boys. And it was like the scene at the end of A Marriage Story when the kid is reading the letter on the bed.
Right.
I was heaving, crying, trying to read my son's letters from their sisters. And I couldn't get through it. And they were both, it was two separate times because they got out of the bathtub at different times. They both looked at me as I'm trying to choke these words out, like basically sobbing with the most quizzical looks on their faces. And then both came up and just hugged my leg as I continued to read with tears just falling onto their heads.
Wow. That's very dramatic.
I know. I might have added the tears falling
it's
on
like,
their head.
It's like terms of endearment.
I know.
What it the was hell really is cool. going on? Are well, you dying?
No, we've talked about this before. When you go through a divorce and you have kids, and in this case, I had daughters that I wanted to protect from everything, and you go through that, and then you have more kids. To see these four people come together has been the greatest blessing of my life.
Did your daughters each write their own letter?
Yeah.
Whose was better?
They were different. Natalie, my older one, it was more toward me with mentions of their brothers. And then Trudy, the younger one, wrote letters directly to the boys, which I have already basically minted and put in there. I don't even know where to put them because if I ever lost these, I would...
Yeah, I was cleaning out my garage. This was about a year ago, actually. And I have so much memorabilia and pictures and notes and all this stuff. And I found a letter from my mother when I was 16 years old. And it was such an amazing letter. And it just speaks to who she is. She... You know, obviously it was a trying divorce and, you know, they were at 16 especially and going through whatever it was I was going through. She wrote a letter to me talking about all of the amazing things about my father, about my dad, because she says, you need to know what an incredible human being he is and how funny he is and how charming he is. Because this is a part of you. He's a part of you. So it was like this 6-page letter all about how amazing my father is. And pretty special thing to read, especially now. I haven't read it since I was 16. I was like, holy shit, what a woman.
That's beautiful. Woman she would is. Do you ever envision a time when you would read that to your dad?
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah, I would. I mean, that would be an interesting read. That would be a good conversation. I mean, I'm excited to see my dad. I mean, I had, you know, before the coronavirus and, you know, before all this stuff went down, I had lunch with him and we drank a six pack of beer and had an amazing time, and we were crying and, you know, tearing up and stuff, and it was cool. He was like, we saw each other in each other. We saw ourselves in each other. I don't know how to exactly put it, but
yeah.
He was looking at me and looking at himself, and I was looking at my dad, and there was so much about him that was a part of me, you know. It was just really trippy. Then, of course, after you get a little liquor in you, you know, you get a little more emotional. But I haven't seen him right. since. We text, you know, but, you know, I look forward to catching up. And that would be a good thing to read.
How long had it been when you saw him and had lunch since you'd seen him the previous time?
I had breakfast with him probably 3 months prior to that. That's when we got everything out. And then the lunch was really just a catch up and a sort of a, let's not talk about this anymore. Let's go forward, you know? Mm. And that was a while ago though. It was a while ago, you know?
Does he have other kids?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have two, I have four half siblings, two from one marriage, one from a girlfriend, you know, that this is after his second marriage. He had a girlfriend and had a kid. And then there's another guy who is my half brother who contacted me through a note under my door. And the note said, I have something to tell you about your father. And I was like, what the fuck is this? With a number on it, called the number. Turns out this guy, Paul, is my half-brother who was given up for adoption by my father and the girl, the teenage girl, at the age of 16. And he tracked me down, and it turns out I have a half-brother. So wow. I have four half-siblings.
Through him?
Through my dad, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you have other halves and steps.
Who knows? I mean, Jesus Christ, at this point, I don't know. I could be connected to everyone in the world. I don't know. Who knows?
Have you done like the genetic thing, the 23andMe or the 36andUs?
Yeah, I did the ancestry thing, you know? And I'm public, so I get these emails from random people like, hey, like, this is your like 11th cousin. I'm like, oh, okay.
Do you believe it? Or because
it shows up on their family tree or whatever, you know? But I don't know. It's interesting, but I don't have much curiosity about, you know, some 13th cousin out there. But yeah, I'm on that deal. But my half brother, Paul, did connect, because he did his as well, and it did connect. It was like, oh, this is, you are related to this person, very much so. Yeah.
God. Well, I've done the 23andMe, I believe it's called, where you send the saliva in, and it gives you your, I guess, through your saliva, mm-hmm. where your history is around mm-hmm. the globe.
Where are you? What's your deal?
I was well over 90% Irish.
You look Irish, though. You look Irish. I can see that entirely.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was a lot of Italian, you know, and then English, and then a bunch of Ashkenaz.
Oh.
Ashkenaz Jew.
You know who else is Italian? Is our guest today, Joel McHale. He was born in
Rome.
Right.
That's right. But he's not Italian, I don't think.
Well, he's got a, if you're born in Italy, I'm sure he's got dual citizenship,
yeah. But he's Scottish? What did he say? He was Scottish, right? He's Italian. Yeah. But Joel was born in Rome and then moved out of there fairly quickly.
Yeah, but I think he's also Irish.
He's Irish. That's right.
So Joel McHale
is us.
This should be the best podcast we ever do, because we're talking to our fellow countrymen. You've got 20% Italian in you. Mm-hmm. He was born in Rome. The rest, his name's McHale. He's got you know, all that Irish going on, and I'm well over 90% Irish, so we can't blow this. This is
no. He does. He kind of he could be a cross between us. You know what I mean? Like even looks.
You think? Yeah. Well, you're short. What are you like? 4'8"
Me? Yeah. 4'10" I'm 4'10"
And yeah. Then you.
Mikhail's a big dude. I did a game show with him. I did actually a couple game shows with him, and he's like his body. He's like a rock. I mean, you give him like a little pound and a hug, and it's like hugging Stonehenge.
Yeah. He played college football. I mean, it was a tight end at like a Division I program. I know. Yeah. It was a walk on, but he was at Washington. I mean, that's legit.
Yeah. And he just pumps iron. I bet you he just pumps iron all day long. I just feel like it.
So that's where he
eats well and pumps iron.
Yeah, that's where he takes a serious left turn from both of us.
I know. I don't know, man. Like, there's such a part of me that wants to get all shredded up. I just don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I have the discipline. You know,
I don't.
I think I don't. I think there's a part of me that might be able to fucking do it. But I just, it's, I don't know. The eating part is hard for me.
I would bet against you.
Well, should we make a bet? I mean, how shredded do I have to get?
I think you and I should do that. I think you and I should try some. We should do a weigh-in. And then at the end of whatever time period we say,
mm-hmm.
you do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But we should put like some sort of picture that yeah. shows how much muscle we have put on or lack thereof.
I like this.
And I shaved my head live on Instagram.
That's right. I think it looks great, by the way. Do you like it?
I hate it. And I am almost all white hair. I don't like it.
I feel old.
I feel bald. I need to shred. I need to get shredded.
Do you regret it?
Like that old. Yeah, I regret it, but time will take care of it. I feel like that old guy that's in every newspaper. That's like he's like 78.
Right.
Ripped. It looks like he's got the body of a 26-year-old.
Yes.
But. Up top, he looks like Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
you know who I'm talking about?
I know the guy.
It's the one guy.
He's super tan. That guy is fucking shredded.
Wearing jeans.
Yeah.
And then he's like Bradshaw's head.
Oh, dude. But you can tell his
body.
You know how you can tell his age? It's like the rings in a tree. It's his nipples. Like if you... if you look at his nipples, you can tell his age. Because they're literally drooping down to his knees. Like,
why doesn't he get a nipple lift or something?
I don't know, but I swear, next time you see that guy, look at his nipples, and that's how you can tell. They're so far down that they almost disappear underneath his breast.
And his breasts are impressive because it's like a pec deck. It's,
yeah,
He's big.
Yeah, but his nipples are sort of sliding off of his pec.
So he's got the face... the hair,
yeah,
and the nipples of a 76-year-old man.
Exactly. Everything else looks great, but there's no muscle in a nipple. There's no exercise that you can do to bring your nipple, you know, back up onto your pectoral. That thing is well down by his knees at this point. You know.
Wow.
I know what you mean. That's a good look for you. Like if you shaved your head, grew a little bit of a beard, and just got shredded, and then got really tan.
Tan, yeah, tan's a big part of it too.
Yeah, tan
can hide a lot of.
I like your hair. Why do you hate it so much?
I just don't like it. I don't know. It speaks to every insecurity I have.
Does Michelle like it?
She hasn't complained, but she's not the kind of person that's going to go, oh, that looks terrible. She's like, mm-hmm. Oh, no, I like it. It looks good. But it's not, there's no conviction behind anything she's saying. I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. I think she's like, oh, God.
What about your girls, the daughters?
They don't care.
They don't care. No one cares but you, really.
True. Yeah, we're all looking at each other inside this quarantine. And I'm the only one that cares about my stupid hair.
Yeah, but it was fun.
So sick of my hair. I'm so sick of my hair. I'm so sick of even thinking about it. I'm sick of thinking about fat, and I'm sick of thinking about my hair.
I know, but what are you going to do about your hair? You could do something about your fat. You could work out. I'm fucking fat ass right now, by the way. But with your hair, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing to do. I mean, let it go, I guess. I think you should have shaved it more.
I've been through 8 hair transplant surgeries, the last of which almost took my career. I'm not bailing on it. I have too much invested.
You do.
I have
you
too do. Much you, emotional
you are,
capital invested you're,
as
in
they
my
say,
hair.
You're, as they say in the poker world, you're pot committed.
I am. I cannot fold.
No,
this
you
hand.
Cannot fold. Even if you've got dog shit, you have to go all in. You
I gotta
got no
ride
chance.
It. I got to ride it.
What's the next step, though? Like, realistically, what is the next step for you? More plugs?
Yeah, I mean, it's either that or just give up. I think, but it's been since 2011, so I'd have to get back into that pain bucket. Mm-hmm. It sucks. Plugs suck. It hurts. They take a living slice of the back of your head. And by the way, that's when Michelle was shaving the back of my head, she's like, oh, what's this scar?
Oh.
Like, that's where do you think they get the hair from? She's like, I never knew you had this scar. It's big. I was like, I've had 8 of them. They've connected scar 1 through scar 8. And now it's like the whole back of my head and what they call the bishop's crown, which is the
oh, there's
San
a name
Diego,
for it?
Yeah. Well, the part, you know, most people keep the bishop's crown, like the San Diego Padre guy.
Yeah.
It's around over the ears and around like the rim.
Yeah.
So that hair is always kicking, and they pull those active bulbs out and then literally make slits in the top of your head and plant them in there. And I'm telling you,
the first
6 of them or 5 of them, I did them awake with a guy talking to me while they're injecting and cutting my head.
Ugh, fuck that. God.
You have not heard a sound like the sound you hear when they put a needle into your scalp, and then you can hear inside your head the the medicine or the numbing agent, the liquid going out of the needle into your scalp. You can hear it.
Do you hear them like cutting your scalp too?
Yes.
Okay, that's
it's inside your head.
I know. Yes. But
no,
why do you go
it?
Under? You did
well,
that.
That's what I did the last 3 times. And then the last time, blah bitty blah, I almost lost my career. So. Hey, that's life.
I think you should dye it like jet black.
It's better than the white.
Might as well see what happens. Or go white. Just go fucking white beard. Come back to sports. Just like, you know.
We talked about this last time. I'm walking
like
back into the world as Bob Barker. I don't know. I'm over that. That's my point. I don't want to. I commend Bob Barker.
Here's what I think you should do.
51.
Here's what I think you should do, okay? And then we'll get off of this. But I think you should overcompensate. I think you should make your body like the guy from the commercials, and then your hair will look better just because you're so jacked, you know?
Yeah.
It will. It will go well with your hair. You're just jacked to the nines.
With sagging
nipples.
Falling nipples.
Yeah, but you're not that old yet. Your nipples are probably still in decent shape, you know?
I think I have nice nipples. I also have a third nipple, which you can't see, but it's
where
there.
Is it?
It's like
underneath?
Tucked under. Yeah. It's underneath it.
Did your boys nurse on it?
Yes. And if things get bad enough during these trying times, I could feed three at once.
That's right. Triplets. You're good for triplets.
I think that means I'm part sow or part hog.
You are. Oh, my Lord. All right.
All right.
Where's Joel McHale?
Joel, paging Joel McHale.
Hey
And with that, Joel McHale joins us here.
This sounds fun. And then welcome to my Star Trek set back here. I broke into the old Paramount Studios this week.
That is very retro behind you. That is very 70s, like, I don't know, Angelica Houston got changed behind that thing at some point in her life.
She is there right now.
Oh, hey, Angelica, yeah. Big fan. We'd love to get your contact info. We'd love to get you on here.
She's asleep.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was, we partied like you wouldn't believe.
God.
It
was,
well, what's up, JM?
Nice to see you, sir. Nice to see you, Mr. Buck. I don't think I've ever met you in person.
No, but you've yelled at the TV when you think I'm rooting against your Seahawks.
I feel you do a pretty good job of being Switzerland. Oliver, I'm not as excited. I know I've met you before, but I can't explain to you. Joe, you might be the voice I will hear if I go to heaven or hell. No, I don't think you want to. That you know this, that you occupy space in people's brains that is just like, like growing up, like there's certain songs. But when I hear your voice, I salivate like a dog. Because I get so excited for sporting events.
Thank you.
And I have, I have so many questions for you, Oliver. I'll get to some of them I have for you. Like, why wear a knit hat indoors? That sort of thing. But,
especially when you have hair, if I was wearing it, okay, I get it. I got bad hair. I got thinning hair. I've had hair transplants. Oliver, other side,
they've done a terrible job.
Thank you. I got a partial refund.
A longshoreman look. I'm going for like a longshoreman vibe.
If I had hair, I would never, I don't care what the temperature, I would never cover my hair.
Agreed.
Never.
This is
never.
Three transplants, so.
It's the worst.
Are you transplanting too, Joel?
Yes. There's so much pubic hair up there that it is sad.
It's barbaric. Yours is so good. Mine is so. You're right. I'm gonna go punch my doctor right in the face.
Yeah, he's.
If we weren't in a pandemic,
right? No, but you have beautiful hair, Mr. Hudson, and it drives people like me and Joe.
Oh God. He asked me earlier, Joel. He said, you know, let me ask you this: do you, when you first meet somebody, immediately go to their hairline? I'm like, oh. Every 100% of the time, meet somebody, it's the first thing I look at, and it's the way I judge them. They're going to have to, like Oliver had to fight his way out of me hating him because he had a full head of hair.
Yeah, he's gone full French artist waking up in the morning. I'm so jealous. I look at when kids walk up to me with full heads of hair, I'm like,
me too.
These kids these days.
How absurd is that? I'm the same way.
It's constantly going through our heads. It's the first thing we think about when we wake up.
It sucks.
But it's everyone's insecurity. I mean, you're always going to look at your own insecurity and see, you know, you can find it in other people, you know.
What are you insecure about?
Oh, my honestly, God. Don't open that can of worms. We'll never hear from you.
He's like, my mustache isn't full enough. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, should I keep it? It'll grow back in a day and a half. So.
There's so many things we need to talk to you about because you are the guest here. You realize that?
I know, but.
But here, how
I
about
really
this? But
then we can so do football questions.
Okay, but we can't. But let's do that. So I would love for you to ask Joe some questions too, maybe towards the end of this thing. That would be really fun.
Towards the end. Okay.
Yeah.
Are people surprised at how big you are when they meet you in person?
He's got so many muscles, first of all. He's so muscly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scoop neck tee is not, he's not wearing that by accident.
No. You know? But you want, again, you're going for the longshoreman look, and they all wore hoodies back in the 50s. But no, they are, people are.
How tall are you?
6'4".
So that's got to be freakish to people because people think I'm like 5'2", and I'm just under 6'1". And people, because I stand next to Aikman, they think I'm really short and tiny.
Well,
and
I worked with I worked on the same network as Ryan Seacrest for like a decade, so everyone just assumed we were the same Russian doll size. and obviously, he is a petite man, and I am much larger. So, yes, it's either, but then I would have people like Joe Manganiello on the soup, or he came on the Netflix show, and he's an enormous human being. He's, I think he's actually just shorter than me, but he's as wide as a semi. So people always go, isn't everyone in Hollywood short? They're either the smallest person you've ever met or they're monsters. And so, I go, it's back. But yes, on average, I'm much larger than everybody.
So the Jordan thing debuted last night on ESPN, the documentary, The Last Dance. And when I met him, because everything's so relative in the NBA, you think, okay, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
But you don't realize how massive and how tall and how it, because he blends in with all these other and then he's next to somebody who's 6'10".
Yeah.
Everything's relative, but I was blown away by how athletic. It's amazing to think of how athletic this man or LeBron James or these supersized human beings are on a small court.
Yeah, and people don't realize that someone like LeBron or Charles Barkley, they just, everything is a size bigger. It's not that they're taller. Mm-hmm. It's that their fingers are wider. And everything, it's like they just turned up the dial and they went, everything's bigger. And
yeah.
Obviously.
Everything?
No, you should see their dicks. They're just huge.
No.
They actually have, a lot of people don't know this, they have three dicks. They have three at once. It's amazing.
Three dicks?
I had one and a half during football.
I thought PEDs cut that down.
It doesn't cut it down. It just...
Yeah, it just was the...
Yeah, I don't know how
actual
it is
Yeah.
Did you...
Where'd we go? What happened? Well, you're OCD, right? Are you diagnosed OCD?
I'm diagnosed absolutely ADHD and very dyslexic. And if I'm not OCD, then I probably... I have not been officially diagnosed, but I don't have like things, but I am... I think like both of you, I'm an obsessive workaholic. And so the second that this quarantine thing happened, I'm like, I should start a podcast. And then I've never been busier.
With your dyslexia though, that was discovered at a young age or was it not?
Oh, I mean, no, it was not discovered. No.
No. So you were left to struggle for a long ass time.
Oh yeah. No, right? They didn't diagnose it when I was told literally I was tested and they go, they said stuff like, well, he's a slow starter. And which is not a medical term. And they told that to my face. And I just thought, yeah, it seems about right. And and we then had my older son tested and the woman began describing all these, the things that everything that I go through. And I was like, oh, you're describing me. And she just goes, I was wondering which one of you, whether it's your wife or you, because it's passed down. And I was like, yeah, you're describing exactly how I read and struggled.
Wait, so you discovered your dyslexia through your son's diagnosis?
Yes. That was fun. And I was such a maniac as far as, I'm such an extreme extrovert that I did, I did all sorts of things to compensate, mostly cheating. I cheated my way through talking about getting prepared. I made sure that I just... I got through every class by cheating. And so I got into college and then cheated there.
So you have tremendous peripheral vision.
there was a lot of that. There was a lot of cheat sheets. There was a lot of writing on my arms and different places and then making deals with people. I'm not proud of it.
Oh, yeah. Joel, you and I are kindred spirits because I'm not dyslexic, but I cheated my way through high school. I actually got caught in 11th grade and got expelled from high school for cheating. Got back in because I wrote some like beautiful essays to the lessons learned. And then I got into college, cheated in college, talked my way out of that. Like I was just like you. I did not.
How did you get caught?
I put the right answers on the wrong test. She switched. She made two tests without telling anybody. And I didn't even bother to look at the questions. I just was looking at the answers and put the answers from test B onto test A. So it was no talking my way out of that one.
Who is your teacher? What kind of brilliant detective?
I don't know.
Well, see, I always made sure when I cheated, I got about a B minus or a C. Because what idiot would cheat to get a C?
Mm-hmm.
And this idiot. And so no one suspected that I was cheating because my grades were like.
And look at you. Now you've got Angelica Houston behind a screen in your room.
She's awake now. She's having her breakfast.
But let me ask you a question about that, honestly. Do you think, because I think it did for me, it develops a different side of you, meaning you learn how to get shit done, even if it's not in the right way? You know, your mind is working in a different way. You're learning how to get through and to get by. You know, isn't that there's life lessons in that? You know,
I would agree. Yes, I would agree. I mean, it also showed me that the system is set up for people that aren't like us, that are not. The American educational system is not set up for people who learn differently. Mm-hmm. That I've learned later on, but I always took it as, because I'm a maniac, I'm always like, I'm going to win. I'm going to show them that. That's the sort of like attitude I had, which is like, I'm going to beat this thing and I will show them. Which is not necessarily the greatest way to go through life, because eventually that will come back to haunt you. But no, I think you're right in that it taught me and yourself other skills to get by. And so I think I use that definitely, because you get told, as you know, you get told 1,000 different times no. Mm-hmm. And especially in acting and entertaining people, that's the go-to safest answer, is to tell somebody no. So I was, I was like, I never took no for an answer, but I really, you know, I didn't, and I wouldn't, and I'm still not. And that's why I'm saying no to this podcast.
Did you see your kid struggling through this? I mean, how does it work with him?
Oh,
now?
Yeah. No, he is homeschooled, actually, because we believe in six gods that will be coming back. And once we learn our doctrine, I'll begin sending you the newsletter. It's written in blood. No, it just works. And he will even tell you, he's like, this works a lot better. And, for him. So yes, we saw him struggling. My other son has similar issues. So I passed down some nice traits. You're welcome.
Mm.
You're welcome.
See, I think on another level, though, we were joking about my low belly fat, but I grew up as a fat kid. And I think being made fun of on the playground, which you don't ever really get over, I'm finding out. That's why therapy exists. But you don't really get over the teasing from when you were little, which is why all that stuff is so traumatic. But at the same time, it helped me develop how I got back at anybody was by being quick and by being funny, and by it developed parts of my mind that I think I still use today, whether it's everything you asked me about broadcasting a game. I think I see it, I can say it. And so it was kind of a blessing in some weird way. And I would imagine for you, if you were struggling in school or you were doing whatever scholastically, you probably develop your wit as a defense against a lot of the failings, and now here you are as clearly a brilliantly funny guy that's quick, and I think that comes out of that.
No, you should have seen me during spelling bees, because that was the worst. Couldn't be worse for me. And yes, I learned to. Yeah, I would agree. Yes, I use that a lot. And because kids would see my grades. I mean, I literally got a combined 850 on the SAT. And they would just look at me with such.
I got 860. That's not a joke.
You're literally sitting in a shoe closet. And see, that's what. Yeah. Look, you have a chandelier in your closet. You win. No. Yeah. But when did you, Joe, when did you lose the weight, or how big were you? I mean, did you?
I mean, I wasn't like circus freak, but I look back at pictures like, Mom, could you have helped me out at all? I grew up in a ballpark. I grew up at Busch Stadium going to games with my dad, and inside the media lunchroom were all the burgers you could eat, chocolate milk, all bullshit that I was putting inside my body. And it showed. And I think, you know, I was a thicker kid in high school, not necessarily really heavy, but I went to a fat camp, by the way, which I could talk for hours about. My parents sent myself and my sister to a fat camp during the summer in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. And it was like being in prison. I mean, they didn't, you didn't eat for a month. And my dad showed up. It was in Massachusetts. My dad, originally from Massachusetts, he shows up to do a Patriots game. He drives over to visit my sister and me in fat camp. First of all, I was homesick beyond belief. Secondly, I wasn't eating. He shows up. We get into his car. He takes us straight into town, and we go right to Haagen-Dazs. I had chocolate chip ice cream for the first time, and he came back, and I guess he said to my mom, Carol, those kids are going to sue us. Like, what the hell have we put them in? But that shit is traumatic, and I think back on that, like, God, I was... That's why I look at myself in the worst possible light every time I look into a mirror. That's...
Were you made fun of, though, as a kid? I mean, at school, were you teased for being fat?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When in my middle school years, absolutely. And that's why I was saying I had to develop this kind of thick skin, knock on, you know, so to speak, and really fight back with words, because I was not going to throw punches. That really wasn't my style, and I would have gotten my ass kicked. So I had to fight back and kind of shame the other person.
Did
through
you
words,
but, when you yeah. Did you go to your high school reunions?
Yeah, and everybody who was fat is thin, and most, not everybody, but most people who were thin, who didn't care back then, it was like, oh, I can eat right. anything. I'm thin. Now they're all, you know, yeah, they're big.
And did you, when you walked into that 10 or maybe the 20 year, did you have that feeling of like, well, guys, look who won?
Absolutely not. I walked into that 10, 15, 20 year reunion right back into my same old mindset with the same old people that I used to look at.
Wow.
I went right back. I reverted. I like damn near started sucking my thumb and sitting in the corner.
So even when the dickheads who were mean to you and a-holes, when they walked up to you at the reunion, were like, "Yeah, a picture."
Will you do my voicemail?
You did not at all feel like, yeah. You did not at all feel like, oh, this is
some vindication, right?
No, not really. I think those scars are so deep, and I still think of myself in some ways as like the high school or college or young broadcaster kid that was trying to find it. I'm about to turn 51 years old. I feel mentally and almost emotionally when I look at people I cover, like they're still older than me. We've talked about this already on this podcast. I look at Aaron Rodgers and I think, oh yeah, he's my contemporary. Or look at head coaches and I think they're 20 years older than me. I'm older than they are. It's just, I'm kind of stuck that way.
Wow,
that's weird.
I have the same thing of like,
I feel that way.
Yeah, where I go, wait, when I look at Sean McVay, I'm like, wait a minute. How are the coaches?
He's like
33.
He's 33 years old.
No, I'm 48. So I'm just like, what? There was you know how there's that moment. My dad is 82 and he goes, I still feel like I feel like it was 60 yesterday. And he was like, and I feel like I was 40 2 days before that. And I was like, oh, I guess this just never stops.
And how ironic, Joel, that your dad was an educator, right? I mean, wasn't he working he was a dean of students?
He was, but he got out of that pretty quick and became a businessman. And he would tell you, it took him 25 years to figure out what he wanted to do. He should have been an artist probably, but he said he pretty much hated business, but he did it for us. But then he started his own business and found happiness through that way. But yes, he was. But the reason why he was the dean of students was because he saw, this is pretty amazing, but he saw the movie Roman Holiday in high school. And that would have been late 50s, early 60s. And he pointed to the screen in the movie theater and said, that's where I'm going. And then he figured out, because he's also dyslexic, but won't admit it.
I was going to ask you.
Oh, yeah, he totally is. But he went to Loyola in Chicago. And then there's Loyola Rome Center. He figured out how to get there and how to be employed by there. And he lived in Rome for 10 years, and that's where I met my mom.
And you were born in Rome, right?
I was born in Rome.
How long did you live in Rome?
I'm in Rome now, dickhead. No. can't you tell? Look at the background. Rome. That's true. We were very, I think I was like four
when I left, three when I left. That was because my dad wasn't, he was like, I wasn't making any money. I was making like $6,000 a year being the dean of students. And then we were getting to this age where it was either go to Italian public schools or come to back to America for them. And they made a hard choice. My aunt and uncle are still there in Rome. Wow. My uncle, my grandfather worked for the UN stimulating fish populations around the world. That was his entire job, which it sounds anyway, I'll talk about that later. But they lived in Vancouver, British Columbia, and they got the offer to move to Rome in the 60s, which Rome in the 60s will go down in history as one of the best places to be during the 60s.
God.
That's how they all, that's why everyone's like, you're not Italian. And I was like, no, can't you see? It's so Italian. Anyway, I think that's their first love, is definitely Italy.
You always had a great relationship with your dad. I mean, growing up.
Yeah. Tight. I mean, there was an attempted murder when I would, no. I think everyone is hard on their parents. And I think anybody who says, my parents were the greatest people, I'm their best friend or whatever, I'm like, that person's lying. Because, so my parents are tremendous people and they loved us and they gave us a great upbringing. And of course there's stuff that happens and everyone's a person, but I'm always like, they sacrificed a lot for us. And so God bless them. I love them. Mm-hmm. Were your parents good to you?
Well, I came from a divorced situation, right? So Kurt's my stepdad. He came into my life when I was six and raised me, you know, which was amazing. But at the same time, it was scary. You know, my mom before that had boyfriends and she was sort of doing her thing. And then Kurt comes into my life and he was an amazing man, but still not my dad. And then my dad was good. It was good till I was about 10 or 12 years old. And then he just left the picture entirely. So it was a lot. I mean, it was a confusing time for me, you know, for sure. For sure.
Did you have to go to counseling and all that?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I've been in therapy since I was 20 years old, but not, I like it now. I mean, I'm interested in the human condition. I like to figure out why I do certain things, you know. It's great. It's changed my life. It's saved my life for sure. You know, because you see all that shit that it comes out, the unconscious stuff becomes conscious when you're in relationships. My career. Okay. This is a perfect example of how dad sort of leaving has affected my self-esteem in my career. I just don't feel like I'm good enough. I mean, all that bullshit. You know what I mean? I just can't seem to really, truly believe in myself. You know why? I don't know. It gets better and better, but it's fucking crazy. It's crazy the things that sort of come up, you know. And it can all stem and root back from my childhood. It always does.
Is your dad in your life now?
We text. We were texting yesterday, and you know, it all stemmed from a fucking stupid Instagram post I did a few years ago on Father's Day. It was a picture of myself and Kate and my dad. And our arms around each other, in each other in better times. And I wrote "Happy Abandonment Day," and and I was trying to be funny, you know. And it blew up and became a whole thing. And he
shot
got angry
across the bow.
Yeah,
that is...
yeah. But I will say though, it was
that went in a direction, and then across the Instagram said, "Fuck you, all dads." So I think there might be.
But at the end of the day, what it did do is it actually brought us together because he got pissed. He did an interview and hated on me. I finally connected with him and I was like, look, let's just have a conversation. And it ended up in three different meetings and drinking six pack of beer and, you know, actually laughing and crying together a little bit. And now we have somewhat of a relationship because of my stupid joke, you know. So.
All right. Joe, did your parents love you?
Oddly enough, my dad was one of Oliver's mom's boyfriends back in the day.
Oh my god!
While he was married to my mom, which is why we started this podcast. Now, my dad, I wrote a book a few years ago called It Lucky Bastard, because my dad was married with six kids, met my mom, who was trying her hand at Broadway and was singing and dancing, and came through St. Louis back through her hometown and met my dad. And then let's just say 9 months later, I arrived on the scene, and my dad kind of shifted gears entirely and ended up marrying my mom. And then my mom and dad had another child, and we've been not, I was lucky. I really did consider my dad, because I think he looked back at mistakes that he had made, and I had come around long enough after some of those mistakes that he took me. I was in every National League city by the time I was 12, and I was around the Cardinals and shagging fly balls in the outfield, trying as a fat kid to fit into a bat boy's uniform.
Wow,
and
you really, that fat kid thing, really.
I just brought that back in. really, that really
getting to him.
I'm okay. Yeah, so he and I just was always with him, and I looked up to him, and I did consider him, like, literally. He was the best man at my first wedding.
How many weddings have you had?
Seven. I am the Larry King of sports broadcasting.
Oh, but you're a polygamist, right? So you just...
I am. They're all here. It's just some I talk to more than others.
All right, Well, there's a pecking order.
There is a pecking order.
You have brothers and sisters, right, Joel?
I got two brothers.
Older?
Older and younger.
Oh, you're in the middle.
Yes. And then everyone goes, oh, that explains it.
I don't know if I believe it's all middle BS. Child stuff.
No, but again, parents, they provided this wonderful place for us to grow up, and they were really supportive, and like, they supported me in my acting. They always said, have a backup plan. And I was like, what? So I was always like, okay, I'll be a surgeon. How does that for a backup? Once they realized I was no good at anything else, then they were like, all right, yeah, you should do that. No, but my brother is an electrician in Seattle, and he's furloughed. And then the little brother is an Episcopal priest in Alameda, California. And so he's not furloughed. He's definitely giving services over Zoom or broadcasting. And
is he? But not defiantly still having a congregation and showing up at church.
Well, as you know, Jesus only cares about certain people, and he's not going to get people sick if you're at church. It's just not, everyone knows you're safe. It's a place you can hide. Yeah.
There's two things I definitely want to talk about before we finish this, and that is your son going through open heart surgery at two months old, and how you can, I mean, you get through what you have to get through. There's no other way around that. But how you come out of that on the other side, it all went well. But how you're able to, as he's growing and playing and doing stuff, you're able to kind of eliminate that worry, or is that worry always there, like something's going to go wrong? Or do you kind of stew on that at all?
No, I don't really, because he had about as simple. So yeah, it was horrific at the time when you get the news, because your kid is not, you see like failure to thrive on the sheet when you have a newborn, and you're like, what is happening? You just had this miracle come into your life. And you're like, oh, all of a sudden I'm one of these people now who has this thing going on. And so I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this little guy with bones and skin and muscle was in distress and in, you know, like, oh, what's the future now? It's dark, it seems. And
did you learn about this after? Meaning, like, he was born, everything was great for a minute, and then it was like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Or was this?
Yeah, it began to present itself a couple days after. They could have found it in utero, but the guy did not catch it, which we actually are now thankful for, because then that would have been that much more stress sitting there going like, well, when this baby comes out, what are we going to do? And so instead it was kind of, the Band-Aid was ripped off And that ultimately was better. But if you needed our hope and heart surgery, this was the surgery you wanted. He had two holes, which was when you start getting into veins and into the chambers of the heart, when you start messing with that, that's when it's multiple surgeries and their life is deeply affected. This is just a patch, which is undetectable now. It's a patch of his own skin. Now, the surgery took 16 hours in 1908, but now it took an hour and a half. Okay. It took 15 minutes, basically. So, and we knew the surgery, we were sitting there at the LA Children's Hospital going, I wonder if the surgery is done. And I was like, I think it is, because the doctor is sitting there eating a sandwich. And so we really learned a ton. On the recovery floor, people would walk, like we got to know some people, like kids with heart transplants, and they would say to us, oh, we wish we had what your kid had, but instead, I mean, these are people that if their kid sneezes, they're going to the emergency room because any sort of sickness or cold is deeply can kill them. It's horrible. I don't even know what it would be like now with the virus. But this is a terrible story. But our doctor did like multiple surgeries that day. And one of the kids of this kid, he was a little bit older than Eddie. And we met the kid and he was like 4 or 5 months old and his valve was messed up and he died that same day that our kid had a successful surgery. And I'll never forget the doctor. He came and talked to us and then he went and talked to them. But I saw the door closing on them being told the news. And basically it was unsuccessful. And once they took him off the heart machine, he was going to pass away, which is exactly what happened. And you go, there's not the despair I couldn't imagine. And but then you go, how come we got so lucky? And then people go at us like, lucky? What are you talking about? Your kid had open heart surgery. So it was like going into a tunnel that we came out of, and we knew that people were not coming out of that tunnel. And so,
you know, if you want to experience every emotion and you want to also see the good that people have walking this planet, spend a day in a children's hospital, because not only are you seeing despair from parents, you know, just completely frightened children in certain circumstances, you see these workers, these caregivers, these doctors, it was a life-changing experience when our first daughter, they thought she might have cystic fibrosis, and going in there and having her checked, and then waiting for results while she was just barely able to walk at the time. And I just was taking in all these little storylines that were obviously happening around me. And I thought, you know, whenever I make it somewhere in this city, this was St. Louis Children's Hospital, I'm going to do everything I can to raise money for this place, because you just see the faces and the people that are there and the heartbreak they go through as caregivers every day. It is, if you want a sobering day, and I think in the end, an uplifting day for the most part, spend time there. So good for you that your story has that answer, had that ending.
I volunteered at the Children's Hospital of LA for a couple years, and I read to kids up, I forget what floor it was, but I had to scrub in, and you know, when they're on their last stages, sort of their immune systems are just stripped, you know, in the last sort of final moments to try to save their lives. It was incredible, you know what I mean? I can't even imagine going through something like that. I almost died at birth. I had meconium aspiration, actually. I had a 30% chance of living. I made it, though, yeah. I think.
And, well, you made it, and then your hair's like that, asshole. So.
God, that's so annoying.
Does that change you, though, Joel? Like, when you go through something like that, I mean, it's hard to quantify it, but is it like, oh, shit, I mean, something has shifted in me entirely? I can't even imagine going through something like that.
Boy, now I'm like, I'm pretty much the same selfish asshole I've always been. And
Right.
You do, but now, like, you can't even really even see the scar on his chest, and And so, yeah, I mean, I think everything changes us but obviously if I didn't have, like, I'm very lucky. My wife continues to agree to be with me and I would be talk about just drinking milkshakes and drinking beer all day, which now I do, but without her, I don't know what I would be like. Yes, I think we're all changed by our different things and thank God. Now, Eddie, you know, he's 15 now. And
is this the same kid that threw up at the White House correspondence dinner?
That's the 12-year-old. That was then he was six.
Was that out of nerves? I hope it was nerves, because if he threw up and he was like deathly ill, there was a picture shortly thereafter of him shaking the hand of the president. I mean, now that
the hand, the kid that threw up, we just thought he was being shy and he was just deathly ill. And talk about a COVID situation, because in that room, I don't know if you guys have been, for those of you who've not,
did you perform there or MC it then, or what?
That was right before you met. There was like a receiving line for the president. We were 100 people. And in this room, it was like a weird fever dream, because your son is vomiting. And then you have Andrew Luck and Eric Stone Street trying to help you out, because and there's De Niro. And then Zooey Deschanel is wondering if I wanted a glass of Chardonnay. And then you're picking up vomit. And it wasn't from nerves. And I know this because the dinner happened. I performed. The next day, my wife and I got deathly ill, and we began getting ill right before we got on the plane to come back to Los Angeles. And for her, it was coming out of here. And for me, it was coming out of here. And she, when the bathroom was occupied, she would vomit into a plastic bag, a garbage bag. And I would just hold it as long as I could. And I must have, 20 times. Everyone was like, oh yeah, I can see how you would get sick right after such a big letdown, after such a big moment. I was like, no. We were ill. Genuine illness. We all got it.
If there's one thing for you two guys that's bad about being recognized, like I am around St. Louis in this small town, I can never do like I'm driving the car and I feel something coming on and I can't pull into like IHOP to go take a quick shit.
Right.
Because everybody sees you walk in. And then if you're in there for 10 minutes, they know exactly. It's just embarrassing. Like,
Don't you wear a baseball hat everywhere you go, though?
No. No.
No. Baseball hat.
I'm not going to pay for my own coffee. Come on.
No one knows who I am. We're in the town of L.A. I can go shit anywhere I want. That's the beauty of being Kate Hudson's
my house
brother.
Did he?
Showed up. I was like, what are you doing? Joe, you're different. You are very, I mean, your voice and you're on TV multiple times a week. And so it just keeps reestablishing with people.
But
so,
that's why I walk in. I walk into IHOP. I'm like, hey, you guys have a bathroom here? I don't do my voice. I just want
to
make sure.
You got to embrace that. And you got to go like, I'm Joe Buck.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm going to defile a room in this establishment. I'll be right back after these words from my butthole.
I like that. Just lean into it.
Just got to go like, welcome. How's it going? It's me. Congrats. Don't shake my hand.
You all know what I'm about to do. I'm going to go do it. You keep eating your breakfast and I'll be out in about 10.
What is the door code for those of us
who haven't bought anything here? Can I see your receipt, please?
Particular Yankee Diner.
Yeah. All right.
Welcome to the Waffle House.
Hey, congrats on getting on.
And then, Joe, you should open the door during and go, if you're just joining us, I'm Joe Buck, and I am midwife, and I'll be out in just a few moments. Troy, take over. Troy walks in. Speaking of a large man, Troy Aikman is a large man.
A large man. Yeah. And as we said, everything's relative. He makes me look tiny on camera.
Ugly too. That's the thing. He's not athletic, and he's ugly.
Another guy with a full head of hair.
just it's...
Joel, would you ever do like a Dennis Miller Monday Night Football gig if they ever offered it to you, or is that too dangerous?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I think there was two for that particular thing. I think there was some. It sounded like there was 12 people in the booth, and I think two people is like the best number for when I listen to like football commentary or baseball commentary. Once you start crowding it, I mean, a guest obviously once in a while, I think, and now I might be speaking out of turn, Joe, because you're the expert. And
no, I agree. Everything you just said, I agree with it. It's three people's. It's really hard because it's not a conversation.
Right.
Conversations happen a lot better that way. And then a technical thing, but if you've got two analysts, one analyst is talking, the other one's talking to the producer, not listening to the guy who's on the air speaking right at that moment. And so they never really interact. It's kind of they're on their own tracks, and it just doesn't work.
Because different for this because you've got three people who are focused as opposed to there's a game out there and then you got to be telling people what's happening, and then you get a bunch of voices in there, and
you'd be good at it because you play. I mean, you at least know the mechanics of the game and played. I get it. You were a walk on, and
barely.
But you did it for the enjoyment of the sport. Yeah. I assume
I loved it, and I had two monsters in front of me who were so much better at football that it was Mark Bruner and Ernie Conwell, who are freaks.
Oh, how great of a guy. Ernie Conwell is one of the great. He played here in St. Louis. He was one of the greatest guys I've met in professional sports.
Mr. Hudson, the how nice he is compared to his insane skill as an athlete. Thank God he was nice, because if he used that for evil, this guy at 21 was benching 500 pounds. He was running a 4.52 40-yard dash, cleaning and jerking 365, and squatting 1,000 pounds. And the guy, he was such an intimidating. The other guy on the team was Napoleon Kaufman. I was like, this is who are these human beings? And he wasn't even the starter. Mark Bruner was like 6'7", 6'8", a monster, and he was the starter. So I was like, I mean, thank God they use a two tight end set. But I was just like, I need to get out of here before I get killed. Because these defensive players will run into me. I'm like, this is not good for me. I need to go. I'm not good enough to stay here. I'm going to go run around.
Are your kids into sports?
One is and one has zero interest. So, growing up, that's all I wanted was to play team sports constantly. That was the only thing, that and telling jokes, and then everything else I sucked at. But all I wanted to do was play team sports. And my little brother always wanted to like ski and rock climb and do that thing. And to this day, he still does all that. And my older brother is a good athlete. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't really interested. Although we climbed Mount Rainier 3 years ago, or two summers ago. And he came with, and he's one of those guys that he's like, all right, I'm going to get in shape. And he did, and he had no problem. And I was already in good shape, and it upset me, and it pissed me off. So.
Does your kid who doesn't play sports, is he a good athlete? He just doesn't want to do it.
No, he actually, if he wanted to, he could be. He's going to be my size. He's 15 and already like outweighs my wife by 30 pounds, and so he's a big boy, and he's just not interested. They both like Fortnite a lot. I'll tell you that.
I know. How do you manage that? Do you just let them go?
No, it's their social outlet now. I don't know how your kids are, but now it's how they're talking to all their friends. I'm not too worried that it's going to, when I hear like, well, they're going to melt their brains.
No, I don't believe that shit. Do you curse in front of your
kids?
They
curse in front of me. My parents hated cursing. So, and I just don't care that much.
Yeah, I don't either at all.
Joe, do you let your kids swear?
I'm ahead of you guys in one respect. I've got 23 and 20-year-old daughters. One's trying to act and is acting in New York and when in normal times. One's at USC Film School. And then I've got twin boys that are two this weekend. So I have got it coming and going, and the two-year-old, I'm about to turn 51. I am drowning in these like YouTube videos of baby Joy Joy and Blippi. And I mean, back first time around, it was Barney and all that other stuff. And I could do, hey, everybody, I could do that voice. And now it's Blippi and these other things. But screen time, the whole idea of limiting that during this quarantine is out the window. I mean, and living in a climate where it just now is starting to turn kind of nice outside, where you can get out and kind of walk around and play outside and swings, all that stuff's great. But for the beginning of this, I mean, we were just locked in the house and there really wasn't much to do other than watch that crap.
My uncle did the same thing, like had three kids and then got married again and had another two. And his new wife had other kids. And I was just like, man, I mean, I don't know how.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's great, though. It's a totally different experience. A, you know, with who I'm doing it with regard to my wife. And B, it's boys. And I'm having a blast with them. It's just full on, though, now, because there's really not, I'm not going anywhere to work. Yeah. I'm just here. So,
You got those 2 year olds. You get to spend. I mean, I know it seems relentless, but how cool is it that you get be around them all? With all the bad shit happening, those are the little wonderful, cool spots where you're like, oh, you get to spend time with your kids. Yeah.
No, we all have to qualify everything because people are actually fighting for life and death. But I do think that this is a special time for us because they're just forming. In so many ways, just growing and starting to learn, and we're in their faces all day. So it's that has been a nice silver lining. I've gone nowhere, and I think they're looking at me like, "Will you please leave us alone?"
Oh,
I think that goes for everybody, though. I mean, I think there's
the leaving alone part.
No, I mean, just the idea that we can be with our kids on an hourly basis instead of just, you know, we are in each other's lives. Like we're having sit down dinners and that's not the kind of family we are.
Yeah,
we're
all cooking, of a sudden it's like the Walters. I'm starting to call my sons John Boy and I don't know.
Everyone I think thought they were going to be sitting around. Someone with 2 year olds did not, but. I don't think I've ever been busier because of your dealing with the kids and you're trying to get stuff done. And believe me, I went to the grocery store and listened to these two employees at the grocery store. One of them said, oh, I'm working the 7 to 7 tomorrow and I'm taking my lunch. And I was like, oh, right. Yep. Don't complain about anything because they're not even taking lunches on 12-hour shifts. And they are getting paid more. Thank God. Grocery companies,
but you're doing good things, Joel, and maybe that's the way but that's the way to wrap this up, and that is that you are trying to make a difference along those lines at this time when you know we're so fortunate and people are really fighting for food or they're fighting to make the rent check or they're whatever it is. Tell us what you're doing.
As we all know, independently owned businesses are going to be in real trouble when they lift this. No one's paying rent right now, but they're all on the hook for it. And all these independently owned businesses are going to be in real trouble. And the margins on restaurants are very thin and a lot of them are doing takeout. So I was going around doing, hey, come to this restaurant because they're open and they have great French fries. And then this is a strange, but Melissa McCarthy and her husband, Ben Falcone, they noticed I was doing that. Then they said, hey, Octavia Spencer just fed a hospital staff. Why don't we put together a thing? And Octavia's friends came in and we started like, let's put a thing where independently owned restaurants get paid for like 100 meals and then we feed hospitals. And then we learned this thing called Frontline Foods was already doing that. So we just merged with them and they already had the infrastructure in. So frontlinefoods.org, you guys, if you want, they're doing it right now. They're feeding staffs of hospitals and all these restaurants get a nice little thing of cash. And the restaurant, you know, the hospital workers are working their butts off. So then they get a nice, hot meal, and they don't have to go go find it and pay for it. They just get it. It's great. So that's
hey that's guys, great.
Good but for
if you.
You
get some
that's
money,
awesome.
Then that would be very nice.
Well, I think the three of us should do this again, not really record it, but we should all just keep in touch and do like video voice calls and just hang out and, you know.
Yeah.
I'll introduce you to my dogs. I got some rabbits. I got all sorts of animals.
Tell me about the rabbits.
We were just thinking, kill those rabbits.
I did think when this thing first hit, I did for a second just go, well, push comes to shove. And you get real hungry. We'll start with the rabbits.
Where are you? By are you in L.A.?
Yes, I'm in Studio City, California.
Wow, fancy!
And you're in the. Let me guess, the Palisades Brentwood. Or Brentwood? Did you say Brentwood?
Brentwood?
Yeah. Just
why do you say that?
Because everybody who comes from Hollywood royalty cannot live anywhere. If you live on that, you have to live on the west side of the 405. You cannot.
Yeah, I know. But I lived in Hollywood for most of my.
Yeah, it's like a single guy. Then you had kids and you're we're moving to Brentwood.
I had my second kid. Then we moved to Brentwood.
Yeah, because then you're like, I want them to go to the schools in Brentwood.
Yeah, and then just space.
We have our kids on invisible fencing, and so they know.
It's so lucky. Good for them. It teaches them responsibility. They callous up with the prongs.
By the way, how do your kids do with your celebrity? You know, do they care? Do they hate it? Do they like it? Do they use it to their advantage?
Well, as you know, it's relative to. I mean, there was a time in 2013 when, yes, people recognized me. But when you're not on television as consistently, I can't imagine what it would be like to be Joe. You'd just be always like my wife. Like if the thing Joe can't even go to a dinner and talk out loud without people just going like, the voice from all sports is sitting by that sort of thing. And as you know,
it's really a downer on like 900 number calls. Do they still have those?
No. That would have been great. No, a really good joke in 2002.
Shit.
We can, you can edit this and it's just good to know.
Oh, that'll get in. Yeah. Don't worry. That'll get in.
But that don't get, I've gone to lunch with like Conan and people walk in and they walk into like people when they see him, they just keep, they can't believe they're seeing him.
I could imagine you two tall people, you and Conan, looks like the sausage race at a Brewers game.
Oh,
the size that the two of you are, an albino
volleyball team has come to town.
And beach albino beach volleyball.
They're like, what's happening? Who are these monsters? These flightless storks have walked in. When I do get recognized, it used to be a lot more, but my kids would make fun of me. They'd be like, here you go. So, you big fan?
Big fan, dad.
You're famous, dad.
Your dad's funny. Geez, famous
fans. They don't seem to care. And but you know, like, then I think. I don't know what it would be like, I don't even think about it. Like in an airport when I'm like wiping my kids' ass when they were newborns, and the stall wasn't, or the room wasn't open, or a lot of them didn't even have the separate rooms for childcare. I'd just be like, and people walk up and be like, hey, can I get a picture? And I was like, sorry, my hands are covered in my child's feces at the moment. give me a sec.
This guy's a dick. I asked him for an autograph. That guy's a dick.
I like Modern Family better.
So, Joe's voice is, I don't know. It's so distinct that, I mean, obviously, if you heard Troy Aikman in a restaurant, you would think, did, you know, Boss Hogg come into the restaurant? Because he's got such a distinct accent.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh God! I'm not going to comment on that at all.
Greg, let that sit there. That man could take
me.
He
will come after you.
I've taken up a lot of your time. what I want to say.
That means it's time to go. You realize that when you agree to come on somebody's podcast, it's like you're their prisoner for at least an hour. And so we're going to let you out of our prison.
Oh, it's way better now because I went on Entertainment Tonight and it was similar. Like it went on for 15 minutes. I was like, are you guys going to use any of this? And they're like, we're going to use it all because this is the new normal, Joel. And I was like, this is
right. Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Including all the setup and you sitting down and getting the camera right. That's all probably on Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah. This is, it's a new dawn. And then I'm going to do my podcast later with Ken and that we don't ever stop talking. So
I mean, is he really a doctor? I've heard that forever. Is he really a doctor?
He went to fucking Duke. He went to UNC and then Duke for medical school. So,
like if he showed up, if you were counting backward from 100 and you're about to go out and you're going to get your gallbladder removed and you saw Ken Jung walk in, would you not do everything could to rip every
Ken
tube out of
him? Ken is not a surgeon or a anesthesiologist. So if it was him, yes, I'd be a little nervous. He was a general practitioner.
Don't start taking this personally. Don't start getting like mad.
But he does go into doctor mode. And I can hear it when that was the reason why he did is because he knows a lot about the virus. And so we have a long chat about where we are on that day. And he's very good at distilling information. He's not funny and he's very old now. No, I'm kidding. But he's very good at that. And so then we knew that there would be community questions. And so it just kind of evolved from that. And we've done stand up together.
I met him at a thing for Fox because he does that Masked Singer thing. He could not have been a nicer
guy. Well, he's also, yours, not yours, Oliver. But anyway, in conclusion, you've got great hair, Oliver.
I'm just gonna say bye. Thank you.
I love you guys.
Seriously, I've been a fan, and I can't thank you enough.
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry this went on like this.
Thanks, Joel.
I hope to see you soon. Oh wait, okay.
I don't know if you heard me anytime tell you I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of yours. So thanks for coming on.
I want all your emails. Send me your emails. Okay, great. Good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Bye. Guys. Bye.